Welcome to A Germs Journey News Desk, an international dialogue about the challenge of supporting community-relevant public health communications. Find out more about A Germs Journey at our website, germsjourney.com, or find us on Twitter at germsjourney.
Okay, so hello everyone, and it's going to be an interesting session, isn't it? So I think what we are planning to do today is to kind of go through the Germs Journey, really, the Germs Journey project, and what we have here is kind of a, looking forward to this multidisciplinary team that we have here as well. So I think the idea for a Germs Journey came about when microbiologist Dr. Katie Lard was trying to teach her young son about germs and hand washing. So I think we will start from that point, and then, of course, we will come to Professor Sarah Uni, who have been bringing in her expertise around education and how we can blend in to work with the children, but also lots to learn, actually. So can I just start with but just asking, what is the story behind this project?
Well, when I had my son, as most mothers of little boys of three or four know, they're mucky little pups, and Jacob particularly liked playing with his cars around the toilet seat and didn't like washing his hands and just had a fascination with those types of things. So I was trying to explain to him as a microbiologist about germs, but obviously that concept is quite difficult because we can't see them, they're invisible. It's a little bit like climate change. So I looked to find a book that would be able to teach or help me teach Jacob about germs. And unfortunately, there didn't seem to be anything aimed at that very young age group, so that sort of early years, that foundation stage where pictures were really important for their learning, etc. So I saw there was a gap in the market, and I am obviously a scientist and I completely understood the science that I needed to put across to Jacob to make him healthy. But I very quickly realised that I wasn't going to be able to do this alone, and that I needed an education expert on board who would be able to take the science and say how best to put it across to young children. So that's when I reached out to Sarah, who we will hear from in a second, and we become co-founders of A Germs Journey. And as we'll hear today, that journey has involved Medina Publishing, who have been key to getting the books out to children, but also, as Rob previously mentioned, the whole co-creation ethos is fundamental to the project as well.
I think that's very interesting, isn't it? So I think co-creation is something that can actually build in some unique experience within a project. So lots of people, you know, as they have been, I've been introducing this project to many people and having that kind of long discussions around why this project is unique. And I think I have got my response to it, but I would like to get Professor Sarah Uni into it and see how you feel about the uniqueness.
Thanks, Indriani. So when Katie approached me, I was also a mother and my children were slightly older than Katie. So I'd been through the potty training period with both mine, a boy and a girl, and I found them both to be equally, as Katie said, mucky pups. And I taught them about the importance of hand washing. And it was really interesting. And my childminder to this day talks about this story, how the childminder had Ofsted visit, and the Ofsted obviously watched how the childminder was doing hygiene and going to the toilet, and he saw my two-year-old was washing her hands, and the Ofsted inspector said to my two-year-old, "So I can see you're washing your hands." "Yes," she said. And he said, "Do you know why you're doing that?" And she turned around and said, "Yes, to wash away the germs, of course." He just said, "I don't know any two-year-olds that would know that." So I was very on board with Katie's idea because I knew that that came from me talking to my daughter, but I knew that my childminder actually didn't have any books on it. So when Katie said about this, I said, yes, you're absolutely right. There is a gap in the market. And we also need to help all the other parents and the carers and the childminders and the nursery workers about how we can help them with this aspect of hygiene. So when we came up with the idea of a book, we knew that it had to be really done in a particular way that would be engaging and captivating to really young children because they can't read. So they can't read words like germs and even less understand the concept because, as Katie said, germs are actually invisible. So we knew that the way forward would be with graphics and using images and making those really bright and colourful for children. And we also wanted to hide the germs. And to do that, we had some black paint known as thermochromatic paint put on front of the Germs Journey book, which actually hid the germs underneath the paint, and when you rubbed the paint, it actually disappeared because the heat friction made the paint go away, and you could see the germs emerge from under the paint. So that helped us translate that concept of just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. And we're absolutely delighted to have Peter and Jules and Hannah here because Medina were the publishers that enabled us to bring this innovative concept to life. And we're really grateful for them going ahead with the book and this thermochromatic paint that was developed.
Fantastic. And I think that's where possibly I'll go to Hannah and Peter, you know, as you want to pick this up. So what is it that you found unique that you thought, well, yes, we need to get this published?
Well, it's a good question. And thanks for inviting us. And Hannah could give her perspectives as a younger member of the team and a newer member of the team. I was a founder of Medina, and we've done a lot of work in the Middle East. We are commissioned to do books for Gulf states. We're currently engaged with the Expo World Trade Fair, which is forthcoming in Dubai. We have five books for the World Fair under preparations, including a book on for children and sustainability in the visitor's guide. So when I went previous to this, when I saw this project, it fascinated me in the sense of its universality. And also with the cross-cultural dimensions, knowing that Leicester is itself in a very multi-ethnic part of the country, we have rebased our offices to the Isle of Wight, which is a very different demographic. But our work in the Middle East revealed to me, first of all, the fact that there are aspects to cleanliness and washing, etc., that are cross-cultural. So in other words, the ritual of washing wudu amongst Muslims opened up fascinating prospects for cross-cultural outreach. So I could see that this, as a universal project and one that engaged children in a multi-ethnic background, could be a very, very fascinating project to get involved in. And of course, sadly, in many ways, events have proved that to be more than the case. And at that time, we were looking at bacterial infection, and then there was talk of antimicrobial resistance. But then, of course, we know what came along, and that took off with the second book on Bye Bye Germs. Hannah then became involved, and I like her perspective. She's new to the project and from a different generation, so that's given us the opportunity to take publishing into social media. But what fascinates me is the partnerships, co-creation, as you've mentioned, multidisciplinary aspects of the project, and also outreach to stakeholders. Since we started the project, we've relocated the Isle of Wight, and we've also set up a bookshop. So as a publisher, we're now a bookshop as well, and that gives us forward-facing opportunities to engage with the readership. So we find that that's a very interesting perspective to have. We publish, but we also are a community bookshop, and we have reach into local schools and the community. But I'd like Hannah to give her impressions as new to the project as well.
Hi. Thanks for allowing me to join. It's great to be here. Yeah, so I came board with the project around March of this year and joined Medina in February as a marketing assistant. For me, it made absolute sense. And I was thrilled when Peter asked me to help market this project and these books. They're certainly books, as has been mentioned previously, that I never saw as a child. And I'm all too aware of, you know, the, especially in the light of the pandemic, how a government top-down communication doesn't land the same with everybody. So it's so important that especially young children and children of different kind of backgrounds get that very personalised communication. Part of my role has been reaching out to schools on the island especially to see how they've been receptive to the books and see kind of, you know, what the children have been doing, how they've been responding, getting feedback for De Montfort University. And we're very excited. Recently, we had a fantastic school on the island called St. Catherine's who work with disabled children. And they recently, the children there, I think it was in year five, produced some fantastic artwork in response to the books. And that just shows the impact that they're having. And my role is to act as that messenger to convey that feedback back to the project in order to make it stronger and order to help make sure that the books is disseminated as far as and wide as possible. And another thing I've been working on and we're in the planning stages of is producing a lovely reading video for children as another way to kind of interact with the text. One thing that I've come across in my experience so far working with social media, working in marketing and at university, having graduated last year, is the importance of making sure information is accessible. So it made sense to me to suggest when I came on board to the project, the idea of having a sign language interpreter involved in these videos. And in order to make sure that deaf children have other ways of accessing media and resources relating to the project. So that's something I'm working very closely with in terms of DMU comms team to bring to life and Jules, the illustrator, to use kind of color and lots of interactive schema to make that happen. And it's interesting promoting it on social media because once people see it, it makes sense in their heads and it's not a question. It's my child needs to know this. And I think this is some old tale after the pandemic. It will always be important. It will always be relevant. And it will, you know, as Peter has suggested, increase in importance with antimicrobial resistance and other health challenges. So for me, it's a fantastic project to be involved in, and I'm having a great time playing a part in creating that impact.
Great, thank you. Yeah, and I can hear that passion in that voice. You know, I kind of see your involvement there as well. And it's a good kind of transition point to come to Jules about it. And you know, so first of all, I'm very much, I love your YouTube channel. It's a great one to learn things. And of course, you know, lots of schools have picked up on your YouTube channel, which is fantastic. If I ask you, like, how did you visualize this project? And can you let us know a little bit more about your thoughts when you were illustrating for the book?
Yeah, so I think it had a particular resonance for me because I was actually recovering from COVID when I got the phone call from Medina. So I was, you know, I could understand from a completely different perspective what was needed. And also because I'm sort of specializing in producing picture books. I write and illustrate picture books and also books for slightly older children up to about 9 or 10, but predominantly picture books. And I could see what both DMU and Medina wanted out of this because it needed to be something that was accessible to young children. So like Sarah was saying, they're not necessarily reading many words, you know, perhaps a little when they're in reception, but they needed enough to be able to pick up on the visual clues of the illustrations and get the message as well through some of the words or just listening to the narrative. It needed to be quite simple. And it needed to be, I felt it needed to be accessible to as wide a demographic as possible. So when I started to think about the characters, I was thinking about perhaps two brother and sister who, so that, you know, from the very start, we've got something that's not gender specific. So we've got both sexes. And I was thinking about where they, what their ancestry might have been. So perhaps who their parents are. And initially I had the idea of having a younger mum who has darker skin. So one of the children has darker skin and also an older father. So you've got that sort of blended family as well of perhaps having an age difference. In the end, we decided to just go with mum, sort of partly because it simplified things, but also we didn't sort of want people to wonder who the man in the story, what, you know, is that granddad? I don't kind of understand what's going on here. So we kind of, we retired the dad and we just kept mum and the two children. And then it needed to be, we sort of worked together. And this was all in the early days of the first lockdown. So during, I think most of it was completed during March of 2020. A lot of the concepts, and between Sarah, Katie, myself and Medina, we kind of put all our ideas together. And of course, Sarah and Katie did all the scientific side of it and told me what needed to be said. And then I offered my thoughts and feelings about the concept of the pictures and the narrative. And we talked about the title of the book, because I wasn't involved with the initial Germ's Journey book, but we knew this next one was much more sort of COVID based. So we sort of bumped around a lot of ideas for titles. And then just sort of the layout as well, that needed to be sorted out quite early on, so that we knew that there were going to be lots of bubbles with thoughts and tips for parents to go back to a page or two pages where Katie and Sarah had put hints and tips for parents to use, and so not necessarily for the children. And all this needed to come together. So it was quite a long time of research and development. And then, of course, bringing together the illustrations and the text and all the rest of it. So, yeah, it was a very interesting project to be part of. And something that I think is absolutely vital in schools.
Thank you. That's great. Yeah. And I think, you know, at this stage, like, of course, I mean, that brings us to kind of think about possibly or know from you on the project that what is the age group that we are looking for primarily here? Is it the primary schools or the secondary schools? Is there a specific age group that we are looking at? Maybe Katie or Sarah?
On that, the original book was very much based on nursery schools, FS. And so we developed the book with those children in mind. And that feeds into what Sarah was saying about illustrations being absolutely key. And we did a lot of co-creation with teachers, etc. We took the book to India, the UK version then, and co-created with Madna Savna, which is a charity that works with children, and also with the Environmental Sanitation Institute. And what we found there is the book was for a much wider age range of children. We then went on to develop the book for West Africa. So Sarah and Sapphire, who's been absolutely key to this project, I'm sure Sarah would agree on that, has held it together. She's our researcher on it. Went to Sierra Leone. And again, they developed the book, which the age range out there was wider. We saw a lot of different concepts. So in the UK, the children understood what the germ was, but didn't really know how to wash their hands. We call it tickle fingers because they literally sort of wiggle their fingers under the tap and think they've washed their hands. Whereas in India and Sierra Leone, they had a much better understanding of having to wash their hands, but didn't understand the germs. So Medina worked with us and developed these books for these other regions as well, which I'm sure Peter will have tell you about was exceptionally challenging in getting the delivery of these books to some quite rural areas as well. So it was real teamwork. And I think something we haven't mentioned is that we've donated most of these books. So in total, there's been 3,000 books donated across three continents. And then the Bye Bye Germs book, when it was first developed, as Jules said, it was in that first lockdown, was made freely available by Medina to anyone in those first few months, or an ebook was made freely available to anyone who needed it. So teachers, parents, healthcare workers, it went out over the Isle of Wight. So this was really important. It was everyone coming together for the greater good, basically. And since then, we've had a large donation from Barclays, which has allowed 1,000 books of Bye Bye Germs again to be distributed across the UK to help schools. And we are aiming at lower primary with the Bye Bye Germs book, maybe slightly older than just the sort of nurseries and FS. So I don't know if Sarah wants to pick on, Peter wants to pick up on some of the work that we've done overseas and the donation of the books.
If I could just jump in there with Katie's remarks there, yeah, an interesting aspect of the project was our repurposing, going back to what Jules was saying. When we were in the early stages of developing the illustrative material, we asked Jules as far as possible to be sort of flexible in the approach, so it could be a plug and play, so that components of illustrations could be repurposed for wherever the audience was targeted. And that was a very good example with the Emirates, Middle East, where our representative there managed to get Dettol, which is part of Reckitt and Benckiser, the global sort of health company and product company. They supported a limited edition in the UAE in English, and we were able with Jules to sort of swerve the content, the illustrative content, to the culture of the Emirates. And that has been very, very successful. On the back of that, we've used the funding to have a translation into Arabic, because it's when we can get the book into a foreign language that you really do reach out to the nationals of that country, rather than just the overeducated, in a sense, kids, or the expatriate kids. What we're targeting now are the hundreds of millions of Arab speakers. And that will again need repurposing because of the different approaches of different Arab countries. So there's huge potential there. And also another market which we've tried to break into and look at to try to get interest is China, which again, in terms of prospects for publishing, Chinese readily do take Western-produced books. But we, because of the approach we've used with the design, and as Jules pointed out, this is sort of multidisciplinary, that design can be adjusted and purposed for the target audience, either culturally, religiously, whatever, so that the audience are seeing a book that relates to their lifestyle. And that takes us to co-creation, whether these designs should be almost open source, so that you can empower communities to take on this and adjust it the way they want, with the kind of not supervision, but with the inputs of the specialists like yourself, the educational specialists like Sarah. And I think that's where the project does potentially have huge prospect. We're hoping now to have the Ministry of Education in Saudi Arabia look at it, because that's a very, very youthful population. 60% of the population are under the age of 25. And with a population of 30 million, we could and should get support. And also countries like the Gulf States all have big outreach programs into other territories around the world. So we're hoping, on the back of the English edition, and on the back of the Dettol-sponsored edition in the UAE in English, to get some traction on foreign languages. And plus, of course, the work you've already spurred in India with the Gujarati population. So there's huge prospects. And then also the come-home prospects, because these are multicultural targets. And we live in a multicultural society right here, and more than ever in Leicester. I think there are a lot of prospects culturally, ethnically, and in terms of the target message of the book. It's a fascinating project. One other thing on demographics is I don't think we should forget the fact that the lessons trying to be taught here or put over apply to all generations. And also one thing that appeals to us because of the demographics of the Isle of Wight being an older demographic, there are many people living with dementia. So the approach of the Germs book to those living with dementia is very appropriate, but the content and the messaging needs to be adjusted to an adult living with dementia. So there are interesting challenges there and prospects which we would like to get involved in.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, that's quite unique, you know, and as you were saying that, I was thinking that, yes, I mean, multiple languages, of course, using that book in multiple languages would have made it even much possibly reach-wise. It can give us lots more, even if you're looking into the international market, but also in Leicester, because, you know, there is a part where we can possibly test it out on ground here. And then, of course, because of the diasporic communities and the connections that they have globally, that can be really a good one for this project, isn't it? Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, as you're saying that, I'm really trying to get this out from Sarah. How did you feel like, you know, when you were designing, of course, thinking about the concept and all of that, how did you identify the gap in education or what needs to be communicated when there are like lots of, say, for example, YouTube videos, possibly aren't very much top-down approach, but, you know, how difficult or easy was it for you?
Sorry, Indrana, you were saying about...
They're cut off there, isn't it? Yeah, so it's about how did you identify that gap in education? Like, you know, how did you... Where did you see that gap in
education?
And
so we do something called translational research, which is whereby you literally translate research that's been undertaken in universities, and you translate that into everyday practice and out into the public. So this is part of the university's work around public good. So translational research is that commitment to say research shouldn't be in a little ivory tower or hermeneutic circle. Once we found things that are really important, and Katie's work in microbiology and germ transfer, we know we have to get that out to the wider public. So I think Peter's right. It's not just about children, because we know that when we have those books with children, they're also targeted at the grown-ups, at the adults, at the carers, at the teachers, at the health workers, in the community centres that we've worked out with in India and West Africa and Sierra Leone. So you're kind of doing a double whammy. You're educating the children and the grown-ups at the same time. So we've made sure in both the books, the Clean Hands Germs Journey, first book around germ transfer and hand washing, and the second book around bye-bye germs, which is looking much more at viruses and respiratory issues and how germs get, and viruses in particular, form in droplets, and then how sneezes and coughs can make those germs transfer. So we've got the two books there. We knew that as well as doing the really graphic visual aids to help the children, we also needed questions and some suggested interactions that the grown-ups can do with the children while looking at the book together. So both books contain what we call scaffolding at the back, where we are making suggestions of how the adult that's with the child, as I said, it could be the nursery worker, it could be the parent, it could be the grandparent. We have some suggestions of questions they can ask the children about the book and about the content, so that you get what we call dialogic learning as well. So you get the talking about the book and the ideas and the scientific concepts. So then we are translating the science and those concepts into the hands of children and the adults that are with them. So this works off the theories of, in terms of education and learning theories, we're talking about Vygotsky's here zone of proximal development, sometimes called ZPD. This is where a more expert other is able to bring on the learning of another who is less expert. And in here, we're really talking about teacher, parent and child. And I'm really interested in Peter's idea about how we can also repurpose what we've done here for adults with dementia, because we actually know that dementia is a very important issue and is affecting an enormous number of elderly people. So I'm very interested to develop that as well.
Thank you very much. Yeah. So, I mean, was it easy to kind of think about how you're going to communicate about what you're communicating to the public? So how did you make that decision on what are the kind of words you need to use? What are the words that will fit in with, you know, appropriately with the illustrations that Jules has done? Yes. So it's kind of a whole lot of considerations. So
yes, it is. And yeah, you're right. And the way we did that was to work collaboratively with stakeholders from the very, very beginning. So as Jules said, by having those very early discussions about what's the joint purpose here, what is it that we want to achieve, we made sure from the very beginning we had, for the very first book, we had focus groups with our stakeholders. We then worked, as I said, very closely with Medina. But the point of this collaborative way of working with stakeholders is that you want the end users to play a participatory role in the project and the process of creating the resources together. So for us, we call this co-creation, and it's really important because it's bottom up. So when we went out to Sierra Leone, it was really important that we weren't saying, oh, look, we're here to show you how to wash your hands as white people, because that's actually really offensive. It's to say, actually, how can we work together? How can we work with you? What kind of images would work here when we're looking at representing toilets or representing food or representing sources of water? Because they're very different in West Africa, just as they are very different to the very deprived areas of the cities we were working with in India. So for us, by having that co-creation model and to work collaboratively, it's about getting user buy-in from the very, very beginning. And it gives voice to those that are participating. And they have a say in the resources. They can have a voice about how they look. So participants don't feel done to, and we're not then part of what is sometimes referred to as the white savior narrative. So it's also about deconstructing colonialist discourses about white people telling other cultures what to do and how to do it. So it's also about undoing that legacy of imperialism as well. So we're not saying here's how to do it, but rather we're saying, can we work out together what is the best way to do this, so that it's based on mutual empowerment. It's about sharing ideas and learning from one another.
Yeah, interesting. And there is a cultural element there as well, isn't it? So kind of learning from the culture to how you are actually pitching your concept, but also how that's going to impact on their behavior. You know, that's quite important as well. So this change mechanism possibly needs a much more detailed sort of mapping, where you're looking into, okay, so I was actually listening to some of the discussions beforehand that we were having today at the news desk, and there were discussions around, you know, it's also the question availability of resources. So at a place where people are more used to using ashes to wash their hands because they don't have access to water, those are the places possibly where you're going to face that challenge of accepting the narrative around the germ's journey, isn't it? So I'm just thinking that there is a cultural element, there are challenges, communication challenges, and how have you, what have you thought about that, and how are you planning to do that mapping?
So what we do is we work with those communities, which is why we actually took students as well, because we believe that part of university's work, as I said, is about public good. And our students are also the co-collaborators with us on the project. So Sapphire was undertaking research. We brought along Charlie, who undertook the use of photography so that we could actually take photos of local communities and what their sources of water are, as you've said rightly. In some cases, it might be the use of ashes. And by taking those photos and then in asking the children to also draw pictures. So we've also got a Gujarati version of the Germ's Journey book that has a children's illustration at the front of it. But it is by having that narrative and that discussion with the stakeholder groups that we make sure that the images are culturally relevant and that the participants really have a voice in how those images are created. And we negotiate with Jules about how that can be then translated, again, this notion of translational research, into images that are relevant. And when we were working with the UOA version, we were able to look at the images, discuss them. Did we want to make changes? So it's about that ongoing negotiation with your key stakeholders.
Fantastic. Thank you. Yeah. That brings me to Katie, regarding, you know, as a microbiologist working with the creative industry and, of course, working and learning more on the educational models and all of that. How interesting was that? And how, I mean, what do you think about the messages, the communications? Was it challenging? Was it easier? How did that all blend in from a microbiologist's perspective?
It's been a very rapid learning journey. And I've had great mentors in Sarah and Sapphire who have taught me an immense amount about the educational theories. But I think that works both ways, because I think the approach that Sarah and I take is quite different. As a scientist, I'm very factual based. I'm very, how do we measure this? What's the impact? Where's the data? And I think so. Together as a team, I think that blends us really well. And I think what we have done in the last few years is not only created these resources, but we've assessed the impact of the resources. So we've spoken about a lot about the books, but we have a lot of online resources that are freely available at the point of access for teachers, healthcare workers around the world. But what we have shown is that the resources change children's hand washing behaviours. We did a big study of over 500 children along with the psychology team at DMU. We've got an exhibition in the Think Tank Museum in Birmingham, the Science Museum. So we're able to assess the impact of an instant song version of hand washing. And we've shown a significant increase in children's understanding in India, Africa and the UK. And then most importantly for Sarah and I, when the last trip, when we were in Ahmedabad in India, just before COVID hit, we just got back before it all started, was that there's been over the 3 years, there's been a reduction in childhood illness in the slums, and that they've also been teaching their parents and grandparents, etc., about hand washing.
If I can add to what Katie and Sarah have just said as well, one of the challenges I think we have with the project is because it is multidisciplinary, there are various kind of, let's not say agendas, but operational methodologies. In a sense, a university is different from a company, although the commercial world is hitting universities pretty hard on at the moment. But as a company, we are legally obliged to trade at a profit. In other words, we are not a charity. And I think one of the big challenges here is to try to make this project commercially viable, in the sense that we want it to succeed. Nothing better for a publisher or for a researcher, people like Katie and Sarah and the university, to see a success. And success in terms of publishing is simply one thing. It's volume of sales. And the word sales comes in because, again, we are a publishing company. We have to trade at a profit legally. So this is, to me, a big challenge, and one that's not really been addressed fully. We've tinkered at it from the side. But if we look at, say, for example, Reckitt Benckiser, which is a UK-based corporation, multinational, headquartered in Slough, the results for its hygiene division this year are up 21%. The profits for this quarter, last quarter, were of that hygiene division, only hygiene division, were 1.64 billion, billion with a B, pounds. Now, if you can imagine just a tiny, tiny percentage of that revenue being funneled into this project and taking away some of the commercial risks and being able to escalate the whole project, then you could see real results. But at the moment, we're sort of tinkering around, trying to, do we move ahead? Do we take a risk on this? Do we pay for the project to go a step further? And I think this is one thing that a university particularly has the credentials plus the research backing to actually step forward. We as a publisher could, but they would recognize us as coming forward on a commercial with a commercial hat on. But a university with the leverage you have in your community and within the academic world and the research base gives this a real opportunity to try to tap companies that are actually profiting, not in a negative way, but are seeing results that are positive as a result of the pandemic and therefore should be returning something to a sort of circular economy, sustainable economy. So I think that is one challenge I would love to see addressed so that we can propel this project forward with some serious funding, because that's what it needs to actually engage. If you want to move into video, all these have costs, social media, marketing, production, and multi-language linguistic translations. They either need support in the way of subsidies, which are increasingly difficult to get from government with cutback in aid. But I think it needs corporate support. And I would really like to examine how we could do that jointly, how we could sort of tap corporations and get them to buy in. Because again, the reach of these corporations with their own marketing is enormous. If you take a product like Dettol, it's across pretty well every country in the world. It's a known brand. It points directly to hygiene. So that would be something I'd put on the table as a discussion point to propel this project further. And I think it does really deserve the success of all the specialists who've gone behind this.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's also part of the corporate social responsibility, which lots of, organisations, of course, during this time, they have come on to kind of build on things or have identified gaps and then kind of invested in it. So there is a huge potential. And I think that, you know, of course, multiple languages is going to possibly enhance that reach, buying into not only just the national or the, you know, multinational organizations, but also the organizations in a more sort of country specific way as well. So identifying those can also possibly bring in more investment to this project. I'm just curious on that point to kind of come back to Jules about how do you visualize this project going in the future with your creative eyes and your thoughts? And, you know, how much have the illustrations or graphics that you have come up with have achieved during this time? You know, we have talked about the impact in cognitive terms. We have talked about the impact in, behavior change and all of that. But we have not talked about that creative sense, which you can let us know about. Would you like to give us a little bit insight into that?
Yeah, well, we're currently working on some video work. So a sort of read through that schools will be able to use. And also things like giving children some tuition on drawing various different germs, whether they're viruses or bacteria or fungus of some description, you know, that all of these things, you know, they can become more aware of what they're dealing with, because as was already pointed out, these things are invisible. So when you're talking about a concept to a 4 or 5 year old, you know, it's very difficult for them to grasp that. So having something very physical, that perhaps a coloring page that they can color in and learn some fun facts about. I mean, there's scope for all sorts of things. If you think about how a big company like Coca-Cola has, you know, they don't just stick with let's make a poster about it. They've gone everywhere. You know, they've even taken over Father Christmas. So there is so much scope for doing things, jigsaws or badges or creating animations, all sorts of things. So creatively, there is a lot to look forward to, including what Peter was saying about older people, perhaps with dementia, and sometimes not older people as well, you know, young adult onset dementia as well. Perhaps changing the narrative slightly, keeping the same message, changing the illustrations to not just children, but perhaps older people. You know, you can do exactly the same thing that we've achieved with young children. You can make that a much wider audience that should be helpful to so many different people.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's great. I would like to, at this point, really bring back Hannah's passionate voice there and kind of let us know about, after all of this discussion and the kind of, you know, marketing on the project that you have done, how do you visualize it in the future, and how do you think that what the potential of the project is in the future?
It's a really good question, actually. I actually have an auntie who works in public health, and I've experienced firsthand from her accounts just how kind of intense a process that is, and how that's what a struggle that's been. So I think one thing that we've discussed at Medina quite recently, actually this week, is the idea of approaching local councils and their outreach projects that they are working on to give them books, almost inspection copies, and see what they can do to use their platforms to distribute books as far and wide as possible. So obviously my role is quite ad hoc grassroots level and reaching out on a one-to-one basis. But one of the big challenges of the project, and in terms of its marketing especially, is getting in touch with teachers. Teachers are very busy. And I think everyone on this discussion will agree with me, you know, making sure that teachers don't feel overwhelmed by the information you're giving them and when you're trying to excite them about something without kind of overloading them with information. So I think it's quite exciting to see, and just echoing what everyone has said, who we can partner with. And it really comes back to that value of collaboration, which is why I think it was so exciting for me to be involved. I've actually had previous involvement with regional dementia fundraising, and having had my granny had dementia, having done that fundraising for a couple of years now, whilst at university especially, can attest to that potential there, especially again with reaching out to maybe care homes on the island. We have lots of care homes here, a massive network of carers, adult carers, young carers, especially, that's another audience. So I think for me, from a marketing perspective, the sky's the limit, and it's very valuable and it's very rewarding. So absolutely agree with what's been said, and yeah, very excited for what's to come.
Fantastic. That's great. And I think in Leicester also we have got this a large number of unpaid carers, and of course, I mean, there have been some discussions with the school to kind of see how that gap can be managed when kids are also growing in those families. So yeah, thank you. This is fascinating.
Been following A Germ's Journey, an international dialogue about the challenge of supporting community relevant public health communications. You can find us on Twitter @germsjourney, or go to our website germsjourney.com.